Awesome.
All right, here we are. Welcome back to Book Wave, the Book Club podcast. Back for another Wavecast with a special guest. I'm your host, Scott, joined today, as usual, by Pat.
Hey.
Will.
Hey.
And our special guest, two more V's.
Yeah, nice to meet everyone.
So let's just start off with a little introduction. Why don't you let our audience know who you are, the kind of music you've been working on, and what made you internet famous around these parts?
I don't know if I'd go so far, but I'm Tuma Vies or Marvin, and I'm a musician. I started making music. Well, when I was like 13 or something like that, but never anything serious except like cover bands or something. And I also didn't live much of a productive life, let's say, until I came across Jordan Peterson, as many of us, I suppose.
Yeah,
totally. Right. And then, like, shortly after learning about Peterson, I also learned about Akira the Don, who brought you together too, I think, with Bookwave, right? And his, like, he even promotes it as like a psychotechnology, the music that he makes, the meaning wave stuff, because it's brainwashing people, or it's giving people the ability to brainwash themselves out of toxic mindsets and into more productive, more healthy mindsets. And that's exactly what I did with this stuff. I listened to it nonstop, like literally nonstop. I had it play while I was sleeping, and then it was playing already when I was getting up and while I was doing anything in the house and so on. And that worked pretty well. And then sometime in, I think, 2019, Akira put out a question. He was looking for someone who could play some guitar parts for him or whatever, and I said I could do that, and that's when we started working together. I think that was for The Path with Jocko Willink, and he sent me something over where he was humming a melody that he'd won on guitar. I have a bunch of those recordings. It's always, yeah, it was fun. Also very, very easy to work with then, because I knew what he wanted for that stuff. And from then on, we worked, I don't know how many, like maybe six or seven, maybe five albums. The Goggins is one, two Peterson albums, also the Navar record. I think that's the one that I enjoy the most. And yeah, that was very, very interesting journey, and was also what made me take music more seriously. Like I wanted to be a musician before, but I never had the, let's say, the motivation or something like that. Also, I lacked the discipline, and there wasn't, he was an external force that I had to adjust to. I couldn't just push away the date into the future with my, like I did with my personal stuff. There was nothing driving me really. And so I learned quite a lot while I was working with him. And then that petered out over time a little, and I focused more on my own stuff. I also... The things, the music that Akira makes is, I think, something that possibly we will need for the betterment of society, let's say, for the things that lie ahead. I think that we need a lot more people to do the things that the speakers that he samples want us to do or encourage us to do to ultimately save us from the brink of destruction, I suppose. But you don't have to be so dramatic. It can also be just so that we can, you know, make the world a little more habitable in the way that's in our hands. And so I wanted to do that too. Not exactly what Akira does, of course, because that's his thing. But I think that mixing speakers into your music is something more universal or more general. I was talking to my stepdad, for example, about the Alan Watts songs, and he said that he heard that in, like, he's a big techno guy and house music guy, and he heard that in a bunch of techno and house mixes where people just were mixing Alan Watts quotes in. It's not as sophisticated as what Akira then did with Meaning Wave, not like whole talks, but still, the idea was loosely around, I would say. And so I started to do that too. And it took me a while to put out my own songs because I never knew how to finish a song. Like, I got to the point where I had the main melody straight and also drums like loosely collected and all of that. But there was still this I couldn't articulate the difference between what I was having ready, like as demos, and then the songs that I heard on the radio or on Spotify, like finished songs. It was something that I just couldn't grasp. But luckily for me, I have a friend who's really, really into the technical aspects of music, like mixing and also parts of musical theory and mastering and all that stuff. So we sat together on that, and he provided the first rough beats that we then used to put to music. Forgive and Let Go is like one of those songs, or Opening Pandora's Box. That's all the guy I'm talking about, that's Neocron. That's all Neocron's music, let's say. And I arranged that and put the speech on there. And from that, I learned a lot from him then too, and the processes, and also like watched YouTube videos on it and that stuff. And yeah, now the music that I make is we call it Flo-Fi. Meaning Wave is Akira's copyrighted term that's describing his specific stuff. And I like don't want to steal his words and his you know his property. So we call it, yeah, right. And so I don't know if it's gonna be accepted by everyone, but I think Flo-Fi is a good general genre name for the speeches with music, because the lo-fi is like low fidelity, and that's the point of lo-fi music, and flo-fi, that's like the point of it's all concentrating on the flow, like the music revolves around that specifically. So I thought that might fit, which
I like
also
that a lot. You could also fit Meaning Wave into the genre of flo-fi too if you really needed to.
So I wanted to have like this inclusive thing, though. I think we first went with flow pop, and then then Neocron came up with like let's make flo-fi instead of pop, because we had this discussion about now, well, if it's pop music, what we do, and it really isn't. I mean, maybe there are some pop aspects to it, like this electronic stuff, but ultimately it's also not popular in the sense that Katy Perry is popular or whoever is like a famous musician today. Right.
Well, if I can jump in, mm-hmm. I have a couple things I want to say. First of all, thank you, Marvin, for sharing your story and coming on. That's a really interesting story and really powerful. And there was a lot of topics that I know the three of us would love to talk to you for the next 6 hours about. But if I can recap for the viewers at home, you're telling us you've always had a lifelong interest in music, and then you discovered Akira the Don and self-brainwashed and gave yourself sort of that grit that you needed to get to a place where you were able to then feature with Akira, and you're now making your own music. You hit another hiccup, but then you became interdependent like every good human should, and you've got a partner and you're putting out music. So my question for you before we go over to Scott or Pat would be, where can we find your music?
Well, you can find my music, I think, on every major streaming service, but on YouTube.
Congratulations, that's awesome.
Hey, just like Bookwave.
No, that's really nice, cool. Nice. And not to forget, you're defining a new genre. So in 50 years, when we all have hundreds of albums of lo-fi, it's going to be really cool to have had this conversation. So thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you for talking to me. I feel blessed.
Yeah, I feel like, Pat, I feel like we could talk for, 6 hours just based on like the music industry today and how like a revolution or an evolution is needed today. Like Akira always talks about the new psychedelic age of music, and the genres are changing, but the way we go about it really needs to change too, because when you listen to music all day like I do, like I'm a musician too, music is huge in my life, and I listen to music all day, and the lyrics are about murder and hatred or depression, that begins to affect you in ways that you don't want to let it. So when I discovered Akira, it was like, okay, I love metal. I can listen to, whatever I want most of the time, but when I need that little boost, I can get it. I can get the meaning through music and through the wave. And I really like some of the stuff that you have done too, especially with the Jonathan Peugeot speeches and the recent Jordan Peterson one where he talks about belief in God. And it's like the Akira wave gets me like riled up and ready to go and motivates me. But when I listen to your music, it's like, wow, this was that speech that I remember that really made me think. And that brings me back into mm-hmm. that zone of just making me consider that speech over and over again. Like, we could talk for another 6 hours about what Jordan Peterson really means about, I act as if God exists.
So, yes.
Yeah, and yeah. Also the idea that Akira is making music that goes through different speeches is in a way hypnotic, because you're not mm-hmm. just listening to, lectures or verbal judo going on, but when you add music to it, it makes it, more interesting too. And that reminds me of how Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, mm-hmm. when he was working with Atticus Ross to compose the score for the Social Network movie, mm-hmm. he was he and Atticus would do would just analyze a certain scene when there was a lot of dialogue going on, and he wanted to be able to create a melody or a beat that is easily heard, not just kind of like flowing through like a normal river or anything like that. Just like, he wants the audience to be able to listen very carefully and how it manages to convey their emotion in the music with the dialogue of the screenplay. And that's what it reminded me of. So it was rather interesting.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's dramatizing and emphasizing the words. I've noticed when working with speeches that some more and some less, but we all have an inherent rhythm to the way that we speak, and even a melody. So to me, it seems like there's always music behind it. It's just not audible. It's only audible in the rhythm that we can hear. There's this one song Akira and I did, Music is Everything, where Jordan talks about how the world is made out of patterns, the same way that music is made out of patterns. And so I think the idea of soundtracks for movies, that it makes a lot of sense, because often, I don't know if you have the same experience, but often in dramatic situations, it feels like there's music. Like, not I can hear music in my head, but it's hard to describe, but yeah, it doesn't seem still.
There's like a vibe hidden in the background that you can just barely pick up on.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, even with speech, the tonality that you express yourself with, like if you're in a situation of conflict and someone's in your face and angry and raising their voice, like it makes you feel a certain way. And I think when we talk about hypnosis, right, like music and Netflix and video games, all of these things, they're putting us in a state of hypnosis. They say we're in a state of trance 95% of the day or something like that. But the ability to maybe score a movie and make it so that you don't not notice the music, but you don't notice it either, and it's able to actually take you to the places that the scenes are also trying to take you to, that, and with the music too, right, like where it's intentional and it does something. It's not just this top charts of 101.5 minute songs that you're going to listen to and remember the lyrics and they make you do things and now you're in the club and the club is a plane and
the best example I always think about is Star Wars. Like, the music of that movie, of that, like, the original trilogy is 80% of it. Like, I always think of that one scene where Luke's looking off at the twin sun setting. Like, that without the music, without John Williams, that's just, you know, a moisture farmer watching the sunset. There's no meaning there. But the music really brings it out.
I have to out myself. I haven't watched Star Wars, but I will now that you said that, and pay attention to the music. Was never a Star Wars guy. Always more into Harry Potter. I don't know.
That's always what everybody says when I always bring up Star Wars. Now I was more of a Harry Potter guy.
You can do all three. Star Wars, Harry Potter, and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I found out about Lord of the Rings like a few days ago. I watched them for the first time really attentive. And I love them. Amazing stories.
We're celebrating 20 years of the movies.
Don't forget Star Trek, too.
Haven't gotten into that either.
Pat's a Trekkie. Oh.
I mean,
well, not exactly a Trekkie. More of a casual fan of Star Trek. Just understand.
Doctor Who. Thing. Can we talk about Doctor Who?
So, no. Marvin, how do you go about creating a song? What's your process?
Most of the time I have demos that I try to get ready in so far that has a basic structure, and most of the instruments that I want to have in there are already in there. And then I reach a point where I don't really know how to progress from that, because it needs more structure. But the structure comes then with the sound bit that I wanna add to that. So I have some like 3 minute clips that I downloaded off of YouTube, and I also have a bunch of like a handful of talks that I segmented fully from Pajot, and also from like an Orthodox thinker, David Patrick Harry. That's what I'm working on right now, the new stuff. I put the music on there and I see if something clicks, and if it doesn't, I sometimes still listen till the end, because then in the middle part there's something that just aligns naturally. But that's what I look for, like these synchronistic bits where I didn't have to do anything yet, but it already fit. And also like the tonality of what's being talked about, of the speaking, and if the vibe of my music fits that in any way. And that's also an interesting search sometimes, because we had some bits where Jordan was talking about something devastating and sad, but his undertone wasn't devastating. It was more like, yeah, and even if it's that way or that way, you can still find light, and you can still, you know, so there was hope, but it wasn't directly expressed. And that's what I then try to elevate with the music. I don't like to go into full frustration mode or something like that. That's one of the reasons why I don't really listen to punk rock anymore or stuff like that. I only listen to stuff like that before, and I can't anymore now, because it's mostly just, you know, whining about ex-girlfriends while that melancholy can be nice from time to time. I don't like living in that. Right. And so, yeah.
And yeah, that's what it comes down to. Like, what you consume is going to be what you kind of live, right? Like, an acorn only grows into an oak tree. If you're listening to emo music all day, you might find yourself having emo thoughts.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Very much.
You are.
I was a big
My
Chemical Romance guy, for example.
You are what you eat on more than one levels. The music you eat, the food you eat.
But it's great, you know, because you're making like these green, all natural consumption music things. You're a farmer of all natural songs.
I try to be, of course. Sometimes it's also, I had that with a handful of songs where I listened to a sound bit and I said, okay, that has to be music for that, and I have to make something. And then I find a melody that fits there. I have one about decolocalization. That's, you know, the process where the Soviet Union stuffed 6 million Ukrainians to death. Jordan talked about that. And when I didn't put that song out yet, but I'm working on it. And that's one of those where I started making the song after I heard the speech.
Right.
Interesting.
So where do you go from there? So in 3 years, you know, what would be the big goal that you want to put on yourself for your future? You know, assuming you have success in all of these, you know, things that you know that you're doing, what would be the big goal, the stretch goal for you?
Okay, the biggest one is not something that I think I will reach alone. I think that's a societal one, let's say. But the idea behind what, you know, what I mentioned this earlier in my introduction, that I think we can do this for the betterment of society. And it's that, okay, so I love entertainment culture, and I love to get lost in a show or in a movie or in a book, and in music, but most of that is pointless. Like, there's no higher meaning, and even the opposite. Like, it seems to me that Hollywood writers nowadays try to subvert the big lessons that we can learn from music and try to turn them around and make people more hedonistic and also more divided in a way. And I don't like that, but it's like, it's this complete lack of meaning. Like, the meaning crisis that John Vavaki and Jonathan Pajot and John Peterson all talk about. I see that and I feel that too. Like, I have that hunger for meaning. Like, I can't, I mean, I do sometimes, but I can't really engage in mundane topics anymore. Not because I'm so smart, but just because I feel so driven to go somewhere else when I'm talking about something that has no effect on anything and does no good for anything. I think that that's something that most people, maybe everyone, feels to some degree. And I think it's going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. And people are going to flip. Like, I mean, depression rate is up since at least a decade, but I suppose longer, and going up even more. And people engage in hedonism in the worst ways, and like, over half of the marriages get divorced and all of that stuff. So it's all, everything's falling apart. Like, there's this giant fragmentation taking place. And I think that we it might be just the times that we live in, and it's inevitable and it will lead to an end. That's possible. But I think it's also possible that this lack of meaning and this hunger for meaning that's in people will lead to them switching around and looking for meaning in a similar way that I did, excessively. And I think entertainment culture can be used for that. Like, we can make funny, entertaining, and gripping shows where people learn something for their lives, where you can actually use that for your development. And that's the same thing that Akira does with his music, and that's what I try to do with my music. And I hope that more people come up and also do that and sample more important speakers and thoughts than Akira and I ever could, and so that it grows and grows, and that what the focus that we have on hedonism and on expediency and all that. Now, I hope that that focus will shift to the opposite of that, to meaning and to love and to beauty and truth and that. And I think that's possible, but we have to provide the tools for that. And so that's what I try to participate in.
So do you think that...
That's interesting that you bring that up, because I remember listening to John Vervaeke mentioning mythology and the stories aligned in mythology and how we are so drawn to it. Even if we don't know what it means, we like the stories and the characters that are enveloped in that. That's why we have so many good franchises like Star Wars and Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings that give us that kind of story and that universe that we're drawn to. And this, and of course, it's been made over a decade ago, way before, you know, the whole woke culture, you know, grew and everything. But yeah, it is rather important to just go back and understand the main concepts of storytelling, and that there is some hope for fictional characters to change and be redemptive, and even understand that, yes, there is suffering, but that's the whole point of growing. Once we understand what suffering is, where it comes from, what it means, we can finally alternate our perspectives into something else entirely that will lead us to more positive thinking and growing and everything like that.
Maybe learn to be grateful in our suffering. Hashtag Jordan Peterson. But Marvin, I'm going to challenge you and say that that sounded a bit more like a wishy-washy dream. And I don't know if you know or if I'm just speculating, but it sounded like you might be saying that you could see yourself in a few years being part of a bigger team, developing some sort of larger form consumption media content, perhaps a YouTube series, a TV show, a movie, but generating that real digestible medium for people that takes the flow-fi sort of manifesto, let's say, and
that's
evolve
a loaded
it
word.
Into yeah, it is, and evolve it into media that, you know, counteracts this problem, this void of meaning.
That's the, let's call it a plan. That's the plan.
Hell yeah. That sounds awesome. I could see you growing a great team around you, and I'm already thinking of people who I've seen in these communities we're enmeshed in and making something, you know, like the ability for a YouTube series to get to Netflix in the past 5 years, it's just incredible what could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that's possible. I mean, for the people watching, if you're someone who can do something that's useful in any way for that, hit me up, like on Discord or on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and see if we can start to find out how to do that. Right now, the only thing that I'm involved in really is music, and I don't really know how to write. Like, I wrote some stories before, and that, but I have no practical experience, and I have also no idea if that's the thing that I should directly be involved in. But I think as you said, like the Flo-Fi manifesto, I think that we can try to
start something.
I think we can try to pin down the core necessities or the core values or something like that, and then try to work with that. Like I release under a label name, 11th Wave Productions, and that might be that would be a place where I would like to include other mediums as TV shows or books or whatever. If I ever were to be engaged in something like that. It's also that I'm working with Sorting Myself Out and Mercury Black. And we have no idea where that's going to lead right now. Some people were leaving, and we were restructuring the way that we put out content and try to give the whole thing a structure. We're talking to Tyler. I'm not quite sure about his last name, who's setting up the Metagora website. I don't know if you've heard of that, where he tries to incorporate all the major communities. Like he's been talking to Eric Weinstein, for example, and I think he's also involved with John Vervaeke, and Peterson would be also included in that. Peugeot, Sorting Myself Out in Mercury Black too. And so he's trying to bring all those communities, which are kind of working at the same goal. He's trying to put them together into one place and to connect them with each other. So I think that would also be a place to look for what we just talked about with, you know, making something more graspable than the vague dream that I proposed.
It's a good place to start, having dreams. And then, you know, and like from your musings upon the state of Hollywood, I inferred that, you know, this guy wants to produce and he's going to keep producing. But now I got to ask you if you could give a piece of advice to anybody who was in the position you were in maybe 10 years ago, whatever period of time you think is right. When was that? And what advice would you give them that they could practically take into their life in the next week? Other than digest 168 hours of the meaning wave.
Yeah, that would be my first point. it's hard to say. Habits are problematic. Look at your habits and see if you can try to alter them. Because that's what mostly keeps me in my unproductive states, is that I have just a decade old habit that I can't get out of, and it keeps me, or it kept me from doing the things that I should do. So start reading regularly. I mean, that's a basic advice, but it's so important. It changes so much. Stop engaging with social media. Also, that's not helpful at all. Even retweeting stuff and all that, if you say, like, that's my take on it. Oh, I'm spreading information. This is important for people to know. But who's going to read your tweets? If you don't have, like, you know, if you don't have, like, 100,000 followers, what's the deal? Why would you waste time on that? Stop that. And also, pick a thing that you're good at and that you're passionate for, and then do that, and do especially the parts that you don't like about it, because even with me and making music, there's stuff about that I don't like. I don't enjoy having to correct my whatever I played, for example. Like, sometimes I'm not exactly in time, so I have to cut a little bit or something like that, or re-record or whatever. And I don't like doing things over, but do that and do it more often and do it more frequently so that you get adjusted to it and so that it becomes part of your routine.
Yeah, and I don't like also, practicing my scales, but it's necessary.
right, exactly that, like practice. And go to church. Look for a good church. Like, I really, really mean that. Go to church or in some other way engage in organized religion, and I would also say engage in organized Christian religion. Don't look at other religions and all of that, but I think that that helps a lot. It gives the moral compass that we're trying to adhere to anyway. Like, you can't escape that, and so you can just, why not look at the thing itself instead of your vague notions of it? Like, just do it. Stop being like, this is to myself, stop being an arrogant 13-year-old atheist, and just, you know, engage with ideas honestly. So I think that's the things that I would, yeah, that I would advise.
That's great. There's a lot to chew on there.
Yeah, to add on to what you mean by frustration, that's a key thing. And you have to experience a lot of frustration in order to tame it properly.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact that I don't like writing or editing or revising my current novel right now, but I have to in order to make it structure and easily readable. Same with voice acting. I have to do, you know, raw sound editing and I have to cut out a lot of things, which is very repetitive, and I don't like it either, but that's part of the process. So, and we've all
Exactly. What novel are you working on? I didn't know that.
It's a science fiction novel.
Nice.
So,
how, like, when will I be able to read that?
Hopefully this year. I mean, that's the most, that's the closest, most accurate time frame that I can give. So,
hey, that's better than in 5 years. Like, I'm looking forward to that. Let me know what it's about.
Which I've been working on. That's the that's how long I've been writing this.
I read a few of the rough chapters, and I really liked it. He's got a good premise going on, so I'm looking forward to it too.
Now I'm extra curious.
One of my favorite parts, just a little tangential, we're reading Lord of the Rings right now, but one of the, my favorite parts I found in that story is just that the success of the good always took so dang long, and it's like you almost can't have a great victory without thinking that you're gonna fail for 25 years losing every single battle up until the point that it's like, no, you win. So keep on
yeah, and like Jordan Peterson would say, you have to have an aim, and even if you don't like hit that target, you're still a lot closer to your next target than you would be if you weren't going for it at the first time. So, you know, shoot for the stars or shoot for the moon, land somewhere among the stars, all that good stuff.
Yeah, he has one I don't know if it's from the biblical series, I'm not sure, but where he has also this presentation where he shows like the aim and then going at it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that, but that was very, very helpful. I wasn't aware of it being okay to, you know, to have a bad first draft, for example. Like, that's what held me back a lot, that I thought, okay, I'm going to start, and it has to be perfect. And then I didn't start because I didn't find the perfect beginning.
Toxic perfectionism is the downfall of our generation.
Right, right.
Oh, my goodness.
Done is better than perfect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, if I did it perfectly, then I would be done, and then what would I do with myself? It's like, you know, you wouldn't do it perfectly, and you wouldn't be done, and you wouldn't even recognize yourself if you got this done.
And right. You feel like crap afterwards.
Yeah, and you're probably pretty good too.
Yeah, just think of all of your favorite art, and if they just kept trying to perfect it, how much like they would lose from it. Like, sometimes the raw tracks are always the best, like, and then you can't perfect it afterwards. It's like, you nail it the first time, and then you never get it afterwards, and then they start to release all these remasters, and then, you know, with the Star Wars movies, the special editions with all of the added special effects took away all of the charm from, like, the originals of what made them so nice.
And, like, honestly, you can't create something perfect, because it's not enjoyable. For me, Game of Thrones was so well produced and so well written, and the CGI was so magnificent. I was like, well, this is great. I don't care for it.
Then you must have loved season 8, right?
I stopped at like season 3. I was like, this is such a well-written and well-produced show. There's so much money going into this. I'd like to see the guy with a shoestring budget tell me about the values in Spain. Like, I'm not looking for that well-produced story. It's too shiny for me. I can't relate to it.
Yeah, I have something similar. Like, I was a big Blink-182 fan most of my life, and I can't really enjoy it. Like, it's not that I don't like the songs that I put out now, but they're just so polished and so... Well, they have, like, 20 people writing on it, and that's something that it just does nothing for me. Not really.
Well, it's like, once you've perfected the medium and amassed all of the resources to create the greatest song in capitalistic society, it's like, leave. You're done. Go do something great.
Right, right.
Like, give your guitars to someone who doesn't know how to play them and go cure cancer.
Yeah, maybe you could perfect that too. I guess exactly. That's the point, I agree. It's also, Peterson has this point where he talks about limitation being necessary for being, in a very weird way, and I bought into that. I'm also trying to make a song out of that bit, since like that's the first song that I started and I haven't finished it yet. Like literally the first Flo-Fi song that I ever did, where he gets into in the first part, he talks about how his son, how he was thinking about how he could protect his son and how he could make him perfect and you know, make him 15 feet tall and made out of metal and all of that stuff so that nothing could hurt him. And then in thinking about that, he also came to the conclusion that the imperfections about us are in a way what make us us and what make us lovable. It's not that you don't wish for people to become better than they are, but still, if you were to take all of that away in one go, then there'd be, you know, an emotionless robot left and not a person. And I think that's maybe the same with being.
I think Jordan Peterson also takes that same analogy for like the postmodernists, in that analogy, trying to like remove that limitation. Like, no, I don't have to be limited by these regular story that we're living in. I can be whatever I want. I just have to, you know, customize my character from this drop-down menu and I'm whoever I want. I don't have to do anything to become who I need to be. I just choose it and then I'm perfect the way I am. And Jordan Peterson's there to say, no, you're not.
Well, it's almost like if you were born with all the tools you needed for this life, you wouldn't be able to have a life, because all of the lessons would be pointless and you would be isolated from experience and you'd have this whole other set of limitations. And then, you know, with, you know, social justice, there's unwarranted limitations where it's like we should, as a race, as a human race, be trying to mitigate all of these unwarranted limitations. But you got to have resistance. You got to have fire. You got to be tempered in something. Otherwise, it's like you're not, like, you're God at that point and you're completely abstract from the human race. You aren't living.
Which is also a point that Alan Watts made, even. He was talking about even the holiest of saints, or the wisest of the enlightened gurus or whatever, needs something to ground them to reality, some little flaw or something like that. Or otherwise, that's his words, not mine, he would disappear. And like, it's hard to see that physically, you know, someone becoming perfect and just pop, and they're gone. But I see that what he means theoretically, let's say.
Well, it's like the Ents in Lord of the Rings, right? Because they are a part of the world and the world is getting destroyed by the forces of evil, they engage in the fight. But if they didn't have that, they would be like, why would you even participate in an experience that is decaying and impermanent when you are perfect and flawless? Because because your entire mode of perception shifts to, well, this is completely irrelevant because I am immortal.
Hmm. Yeah, right.
Because if I save them all, in 100 years, they all die. So what's the point?
Right.
Yeah, also, that's another form of storytelling. And that reminds me of a bit in The Thin Red Line, both in the novel and in the movie, where two soldiers have different perspectives about what is nature during the middle of World War II while fighting the Japanese. One is optimistic, the other one is pessimistic. Insert Elon Musk's optimism versus pessimism song. But that's a good way of distinguishing our differences and how we live through these different experiences, whether it be war or love or homelessness or whatever. And just to see that, you know, we're not just aiming for, you know, one different thing or being emotionless and thinking that we have everything figured out and we have everything. Having those flaws is a way of just shedding a bit of ourselves and seeing what we are held back on, or even just trying to fix something and then moving forward with that kind of thing. I don't know if you've read the novel, The Thin Red Line, or seen the movie or anything like that, but no. it's an interesting thing. So
I did picture Elon Musk singing a nursery rhyme though, like when you said that was, because I haven't heard it, and my brain just did things and it was hilarious.
It's also interesting what you said a little earlier about if you were perfect, you would be God. It's like, that's true. Like in Christian.
Yeah. I've heard Jordan Peterson say like the only thing that, you know, we have that God doesn't have is limitations. So that always pops up in the back of my head when I think about this kind of stuff.
Yeah. That's this Jewish riddle. Right, where they say, "What does an omnipotent, omniscient, and something other being lack?" And then the answer is limitation. Omnipotent, right? Being lack, and the answer is limitations, right? yeah, I mean, it's true, and that's also something that's pointing at God, but maybe that's only through my lens, because you know that's what I'm focusing on right now in my private life. We don't like we literally can't have perfection, because perfection would need to take everything into account. We can't. It's impossible for us. Also, because we have a perspective in the world, and that makes it limited, because if you have your perspective, you can't have my perspective. You can take on parts of it, but you will never have the full experience, and only a being that has all these perspectives at once plus something outside of that could be, you know, could take everything into account and could know about everything and react to everything the way that needs to be reacted to, and whatever we would want to see from a perfect human being. And so, yeah.
And it's funny too, because that's the rub of it, right? Like all four of us can say, yeah, perfection's unattainable. If we were perfect, we wouldn't be human. And also, I'm not going to start working because I can't make it perfectly.
Right.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree. Yes, I agree. No, I can't start working. Sorry.
It's like there's two options at that point. Like, some people reject the idea that they have limitations, and some people embrace the idea that they have limitations. And you can only really go from there as, you know, someone carving your own path, or a victim. You know, the bad guys from Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. Like, imagine if Van Gogh stopped painting because he wasn't getting success, right? Like, we don't have the perspective of our audience. Hopefully we have a part of it, but we don't have the appreciation of anything we create because we're critical. But that shouldn't be evidence for us to stop. And not wanting to start shouldn't be evidence for us to not start. It should just be something that our brain does because we don't quite understand it, and we ignore that data. And we can do that every time we have to help somebody else start. If your dog needs to take medicine, you'll give it to it every single time he needs to take his medicine. But if you need to do something on a routine or a schedule, you let the brain get in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when we started this podcast at the very beginning, and we were just like doing audio meetings about the book Meditations. Just like, if we were obsessed with making it a perfect podcast back then, we would have never started it. But thankfully, we were just focusing on, you know, getting some guys together to read some books about ancient Greek philosophy.
Which is also...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
it's something, it has something compelling to it. I know that, I don't know if you've ever seen a video from Mercury, from Sorting Myself Out. But yeah,
I've seen your podcast with him, and I think I've seen him with like some of the randos and here and there.
Right. So he's got this like very low quality camera and audio, and also no setup behind him, like a logo or something like that. So it's all just he's a normal I mean, normal is also maybe not the right, but he's a normal human being.
That's subjective term these days.
and not like the established entertainer, but that's part of his charm, let's say, is that he's a guy, and you can talk to him like a guy, and I think that's also compelling maybe about you and your beginnings, is that, you know, it's like hanging out with friends then, and not like listening to an entertainer. And that's that, especially since, I mean, now with COVID and all that, we're isolating, but also before that, society was isolating more and more, even though we got more and more connected in a weird way that I don't understand. And so people are, I mean, I know that I am subconsciously, and I think that people are looking for that connection, and again, and they get that in formats like this.
Well, and the thing is too, like, we still know so little. Like, we've started to learn a bit about the brain, but it's like, you talk about, you know, the feeling you get from hanging out with friends is the same feeling you get from watching Netflix. So you do 4 hours a night of Netflix, all of a sudden you don't crave friends. And it's like, your body's not going to make you want friends, because you're getting that need met in the wrong way. And it's like, I've been playing around with like shadow flow states, you know, where it's like your body feels like you're having a great time and doing something awesome and meaningful. And then you stop and your brain's like, that was completely pointless. Like, I was awesome.
I played Skyrim for 3 hours and then I stopped playing and I was still sitting here the whole time. So really, what happened?
Right.
And it's like, the feeling of awesome doesn't usually come from the action of doing awesome, but it does come right after, and it stays a lot longer than it does when it comes from video games and all sorts of other terrible things.
True, I hadn't even noticed that it comes afterwards, but you're right.
It's like that, the residual awesome feeling. If the thing you're doing is only going to make you feel as good as it makes you feel while you're doing it, what's the point? You want to invest your money so that it pays you down the road. You want to invest your actions so that it makes emotions and beliefs and behaviors down the road. And video gaming and staying up late and drinking alcohol doesn't make you feel good 12 hours later. It just doesn't.
No.
It's only a temporary fix.
But man, hitting a 6 snowboarding jump, I still feel good about that 3 days later. It's not helping a child or anything, but it's a heck of a lot better than gaming.
Right.
And it's exercise too, so you're keeping your body moving.
Yeah, it's literally action. Whereas all of these screen times, it's like you're fatiguing your brain, but you're not doing anything to your body. And then you try and go to sleep, and it's like your body hasn't done anything. But your brain is pooped, which means you don't have the brain defense mechanisms. And now the shadow's just like, hey, what's up? I hate everything about you.
Very accurate. Very accurate. Nice.
Why am I in love with you? Linkin Park.
Oh, that's good.
So, Marvin, another question that I like to raise, since we're a book club, podcast, is there a book or a list of books that resonate with you?
Yes. I mean, apart from the obligatory Gulag Archipelago that Peterson fans have to give, I would say I read a biography on Stalin that read itself like a novel, but it was only based on factual information. So it wasn't a novel, but it was so interesting and gripping as it was. If you give me a minute, I'll get it, and then I can show you, because I forgot the title.
Sure.
Perfect.
The good old Gulag Archipelago. Why is that always the first book that comes to mind for everyone talking about Jordan Peterson?
That's hilarious.
It's not even 12 Rules for Life or Maps of Meaning or the 12 More Rules.
Yeah. Three volumes, and it's supposedly it takes you about a day or two to get through the entire thing.
Yeah, I don't know. That's definitely one we're gonna have to get through as a book wave. Gulag Archipelago. Oh, he's brought in a whole stack.
Okay, I got a few.
Heck yeah.
Here's the Stalin one.
Okay. The first in-depth biography.
Based right. on explosive new data or something.
Explosive new data, new documents from Russia's secret archive. So this guy, Edward something, was the first who was granted access to KGB files and all that. That basically, I'm going to take that, I'm going to spoiler you. That show that Stalin was about to start a nuclear war and that he was killed by his I forgot whom, someone around him, because of that. Like they knew that he was going to do that, and they didn't want the whole world to be blown up, because that's what would have happened, obviously. And so they took him out. Wow. But spoilering that is no, like, it doesn't take away from the book. Just read it. It's shocking, but it's also necessary to see how these societies looked, because we're heading there, and I think we should stop heading there, but also be kind of prepared, because we can't stop everything. And so yeah, I think it's necessary to adjust to that.
Yeah.
Then there's Explaining Postmodernism from Stephen Hicks. That's also an amazing book, because it gives you the tools to really dismantle postmodernism, also from a historical perspective and all that. And it, you know, I read this book and also the Stalin one, and also listened to Peterson a lot. And I had some discussions with communists, and I noticed that it was very, very easy to just render them speechless in a way, and show the people around that there's no need at all to adhere to that kind of ideology. Like, there's nothing good about it, and it's all motivated by resentment. And even if there's someone who has like a good heart who says, like, let's help other people, if they stick to that, after they learn that it's not about helping other people, it's about putting people down, it's simplified. I think that's important to bring out into the world. So I would recommend that too. Then there's this one, which I haven't read yet, but I've contemplated.
Oh.
Very
I have,
interesting.
I have an ebook of that one.
Have you read it already? Because I've only listened to the author speak and read about his theories, but I haven't come to read the book yet. Is it good?
I've only ever heard like pretty much the same kind of information, but I have an ebook about it. I have that ebook, and I've been like thinking every once in a while when I go to start a book that always pops up. It's like, should I? I don't know if I'm ready.
let's see if you will in the next 6 months or something, because that's also the period that I'm trying to start it. And then I will talk with Mercury Black, and hopefully with the priest that Jonathan hooked me up with, Father John. I haven't asked him yet, but I think he'll say yes, to try to deconstruct the ideas behind it and see if you can hold that position even from a biblical perspective. Because, you know, because there's also so much psychedelic symbolism in like churches from a specific time period, especially, and also funnily enough, in Germany, my home country, there are many of those monasteries and churches where they have like mushroom symbolism just built into the ceilings and all of that. It's very strange. Which also leads me to the next and the last two books that I'm gonna recommend: The Language of Creation by Mathieu Pajot. This is like it's essential, and it's easy to read, but it's essential. Read it, and after you read it, read the Bible. This is not like I'm not, you know, wagging my finger or anything. Read the Bible. I'm just saying that when you understand the language that is used in these stories, then there's you can't derive more wisdom from any book than from these stories.
I have a quote that I want to bring up from John Vervaeke. Mm-hmm. I have it written down here. And it's the degree to which you don't understand the grammar of the Bible is the degree to which you don't understand the grammar of your own mind or your own psyche. And like, that's really powerful. And that's a lot of the reason why I'm currently reading the Bible with this book club. 'Cause like, we need to know what this thing means, right?
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. That's a good quote. It's because this is so, and it's been so overwhelming for me also because I started. Okay, so in 2020, I started working on two albums, and I haven't released any of them yet, but I started working on them. And the first was made from the whole talk Peterson gave that he called in the end, Who Dares Say He Believes in God? Yeah. That's a brilliant one. I think you mentioned that earlier too. Yeah. And that prepared me for the talk that I then tried to make into an album from Jonathan, and that's his Pentecost for the Zombie Apocalypse talk. And I needed the Peterson stuff because I needed to you know, get rid of my inner 13-year-old atheist. I talked about that earlier, and understand that there's like especially the claim to believe in God. There's more behind that than just you know, the words and stuff like that. So I learned to appreciate things through that, and then got into the Pajot stuff, and he lays it out really nicely how the patterns that you can see in the Christian story and the Christian stories, that they are the patterns of reality. And I'm not saying this from a Christian perspective. I'm just saying that's you can't step outside of it. You can try, but then you will read a story in the Bible or from the church father, something they wrote about, or from a saint, and you'll see, it is included in that story. And like, it's very strange. Very profound.
Some good recommendations. I'm gonna get a couple that you've recommended.
Yeah, I think for that one book, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross specifically, I think that would be a good one to have you come back for our view on that book.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, that'd be really good. I think that we should wrap up in the next couple minutes here. And I want to ask you this question, Marvin. What is the piece of advice you'd like to get for yourself right now from the version of yourself that has had success 5 years in the future? That will get you over the hump? What is the thing that you need to do, that you know you have to do, that you haven't been doing, that'll get that first flo-fi track out and those two albums? What is it?
Man up. That's it. Like I'm being whiny about stuff, and I'm trying to stay comfortable with things. I'm just like, man up, man. Like, it's not that it's hopeless for me from my perspective. No, I'm trying to do that more and more, but I'm still, you know, a little squishy with that. And I think that's, yeah.
Right.
So that's more.
What do you guys think about that advice?
Is that more of like a based on discipline type of action? Or
also emotionally, like, I mean, you know how you hear millennials and Gen X or Gen Z people always say, oh, emotions are so extreme, I feel things so strongly and all that. Like, I identify with that. I feel overwhelmed by almost any emotion that comes to me, but that's like, and now what am I gonna do? Stop feeling emotions, try not to engage with things so I don't I have to find a way to deal with that. That's because I think many people, and definitely me included, try to use stuff like that as excuses not to have to do something, not to have to man up, not to get disciplined and all of that. So yeah.
It's funny you say that, because you just reminded me of this post I saw when I was on Facebook recently. And it's this post that I've seen a few times where people are talking about the seething frustration in the workforce that is masked by simple statements like, I'm a little confused. And you know what I'm talking about? And it's like, no, you're missing the point. That's not seething frustration being masked by a sentence, I'm a little confused. That's healthy emotional regulation.
Right.
Because if you were confused, yeah, like, and you had the explanation, you wouldn't be pissed off.
Yeah, the frustration really comes from when you keep all of that inside and, like, you stay confused and you don't ask for the clarity or you don't make an effort to see things
but
the
it's
proper
like,
way.
It's almost even this sort of confession of belief that perhaps the other person might have something intelligent to say that would correct the whole situation. Instead of being the employee that freaks out or the guy who can't get out of bed, it's like, maybe I just need a bit more information. And then my emotions won't be so big. Can I look at this in a way where I don't believe the entire world is on fire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's very accurate. I feel personally attacked by that, so that's good.
I'm speaking from experience. Yeah.
It's good to feel personally attacked sometimes. It means
Definitely.
You know what's wrong with yourself.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. Like, I'm being thankful for that. That's helpful.
Like, I love that one quote. I don't know who said it, but there's something about that guy that I just can't stand about myself.
Hey, yeah. I said that.
Nice.
Yeah, but any closing statements from our guest, Mr. Two More Views?
I assume there would be many things that I'd like to say, but that would also kind of assume that I know what to do, and I have no idea. Like, the world is falling apart. I'm gonna use Peterson's words and say them to the viewers, just as I say them to myself right now. Is just clean your room, like, bring your family in order, and that's that. Focus on that, and when you've done that, then we can look at other stuff. And that's my problem in my personal life, and I think that's the problem in many people's lives still.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that's where a big source of meaning is going to come from in the future. And you know,
I'd just like to add, you know, consume good content.
Yeah. Like the Bookwave podcast, you can find it on anchor.fm, YouTube, anywhere you find your podcast, Spotify to Stitcher to Google Play. Our website, www.bookwave.club. And until next time, may the force be with you.
Or equal to mass times acceleration.
God bless you all.